Great to have you with us today for another edition of Garden Talk on the Ideas Network. I'm Jill Madeau, sitting in for Larry Mueller. Would you like to add a pond or maybe a fountain to your garden? Our guest on Garden Talk today will teach us about what it takes to add water features to our gardens, and she'll also share some sustainable, low-maintenance tips for enhancing our landscapes. Liza Lightfoot is our guest today. She's the president of Avant Gardening and Landscaping, a business she started in 1985. Her focus is on sustainable landscapes with site-appropriate plants and that include water features. What would you like to know about adding water to your landscape? What sort of things are you doing in your garden to make it beautiful but not too much work? We'll have all sorts of tips and advice on how to enhance your garden with a water feature that's natural and long-lasting. Hi, Liza. Thanks for coming back.
Hi there. Thanks for having me.
Now, tell us about your business. How's it different from other landscape companies?
Well, we've been around for a long time, and the landscape of landscape companies has changed a lot since I've been in business. And, you know, but I started the business with the idea of sustainability way back when. And that has never changed. It's always stayed our focus. And there are other companies that have that goal to provide sustainable landscapes, but I think that we've been around for a long time and we've tried lots of different techniques and we know what works now and what doesn't work. And so I think that we can offer the experience of 34 years of landscape doing this kind of work. So that is what makes us different,
sure.
I think.
Sure. And when you say sustainable, what's the basic definition of that to you?
Well, landscapes that last is one thing that comes to my mind. In fact, I just looked at a landscape we did, I think, back in the early 90s yesterday, and it looked as beautiful as it did the day we left. It needed some weeding, but the landscapes that last, so that people don't have to keep landscaping. You know, there's a real tendency to landscape and re-landscape and re-landscape, especially when we're talking about hardscaping with the trendy things that come along.
Right.
But a beautifully constructed landscape that's done well can last the test of time. And that's always been my goal, is to provide that kind of project.
Sure, and it makes so much sense. Who wants to spend all the time and money to redo their landscape every 5 years? So,
and you know, part of that is the materials we use. I love to use natural stone. It's very much part of our company motto. And natural stone always looks great. 30 years from now, it looks great.
Absolutely. Well, let's, now with your business, you put in a lot of ponds and water features. So, what do they do for a landscape, for a garden?
They add a lot more variety to the garden. They bring in wildlife, which is fabulous. I mean, we have a pond outside of our office window, and the bird life, the frogs, you know, even small critters. We've had a ferret out there lately, and I don't know whether they're after the birds or what they're after, but it's been amazing to watch the wildlife splashing away in the water. Mm-hmm. You know, it's lovely.
So it adds a separate element that just not there without it, right?
Right, yeah. And then you've got the water plants, and you know, the rock work is really important, the stream, the sound of the water, all of those elements are really something that adds more variety to the landscape.
So if someone out there is considering putting in a water feature, what are the top things to think about before you actually go about it?
Well, maintenance is always the number one thing that people ask for, and often the thing that people say, well, I would love a water feature, but it's too high maintenance. It is maintenance. There is maintenance involved. There's no doubt about it. There's spring cleaning of the pond, and then there's putting the pond to bed in winter. If you decide you're up for that and you're prepared to either hire a contractor to do that work, or you're willing to put on a pair of waders and do it yourself, then be prepared for that. But I think, you know, asking yourself the question, do I want fish in the pond, is an important thing, because if you do want fish, then how you construct the pond needs to be taken into account for that. Fish need hiding places. The pond needs to be a certain depth. The liner needs to be fish friendly. All those kinds of things.
Okay. So someone's decided, yep, I want to do that. It's going to be a project. I'm going to maintain it. Not a problem. Where do you go next?
Well, I think, Jill, you just told me that you built a really large pond yourself and you showed me photos and they were fabulous. So
I think the
main question I would ask is, do you want to do it yourself or do you want to hire a contractor? Ponds are not inexpensive because they come with a lot of issues in the construction phase. Sometimes you can build a beautiful pond and it has a leak. And you are spending weeks trying to find that leak. It's happened to us, and you know, you'll never leave a pond with a leak. So you have to. It's like solving a puzzle. You have to solve that puzzle. Mm-hmm. So and it can take a lot of time. So they aren't inexpensive additions to your landscape. Mm-hmm.
So you decide if you're going to do it yourself or bring somebody in. Now we had talked earlier. There are kits that you can buy. Is that a good option?
I love the kits.
Okay,
we work with some kits that we've been working with for a long time. And the company we work with offers training for our crews. You can become a certified pond builder. And their kits really make sense. And they teach you how to build a pond efficiently and also to eliminate things like problems with leaks and so on, and so that the pond will last for many, many years.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. We've got a couple of listeners who have called in and have some questions for us. Let's first go to Jim. He's in Stevens Point. Hi, Jim.
Good morning. Actually, I don't have a question, just a comment. A number of years ago, I brought in a local garden center team to put in a pond because I really wanted to have one for all the reasons you mentioned. And he looked up at all the trees that I had and said, you know, you're going to have a lot of maintenance here. And he talked himself out of building the pond, but convinced me that having a couple of fountains would be really a better way for me to go. And ultimately, I ended up with a natural stone fountain by my front door and then two fountains in the back. And it really did work for me. And I wasn't really interested in all the maintenance that it was going to entail. So that was that's kind of my story with water.
Well, great. Thank you, Jim. So,
I think that's a great option. In fact, I was going to bring that up at one point. The pondless water features are great for clients who don't want to spend a lot of time and effort maintaining their pond. They do require maintenance. You have to take the pump out in the fall and put it in a bucket with water in your garage or something and reinstall it in spring. You do have to keep it free of leaves. Your blower can help. But they work, and sometimes the pumps need to be replaced, but they work very well and can last for many, many years.
And the sound?
The sound is lovely.
It's great. It helps in places where it's kind of noisy too, doesn't it?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. When I was studying landscape architecture, they always said the one thing that will mask out traffic noise. Trees and shrubs don't do it, but water will mask it out.
Okay.
So that's a good solution.
Okay. And next we have Tom, and Tom is in Windsor. Hi, Tom. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning. My wife had an idea, which I think is intriguing, of building what I would call a seasonal stream stretching across our front yard. It's a standard lot size in a town to help drain the gutters. And what we're initially envisioning is like rocks, like a small trough with rocks going across. And I know it gets much more complicated than that. What should we think of when trying to plan it out? We don't want to just send all this water out to the gutter. We want it to soak in.
Well, I think that's a good idea. Maybe a pond is not the solution, but a dry creek bed with some nice decorative rocks and gravel, you know, decorative gravel with some accent plantings. And you can make it percolate into the soil if you put a fabric underneath the rocks and allow it to, you know, over the course of the stream bed, it will percolate down. So that might be a good solution. I mean, you can also drain it into a pond, but, you know, the pond will be designed to take a certain number of gallons. And if you have a really heavy downpour, you'll have to have some kind of overflow, you know, and how do you deal with that? So, you know, there is some calculation that needs to happen with building a pond in terms of the volume of water off your roof and the surrounding areas and how much water the pond will take.
And it seems like we've had a lot more rain and all at once. So that would definitely be a concern for Tom, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I would definitely say so. You know, if we get, like last summer, we had all that flooding and, you know, you could have a bit of an issue on your hands. But if it's designed appropriately, it can work. The Berner Botanic Gardens in Milwaukee did a wonderful thing where they drained all their water off their parking lots and their roofs into a circulating water feature. And it was absolutely stunning and it worked very well. I'm not sure if it's still there, but that's a good place to see something like that in action.
Sure. Yeah, they've got a lot of good. Any kind of botanical garden is a wonderful place to visit for ideas like that.
Yep.
Do you think with this climate change and with us expecting more downpours and things, is this something that maybe parks are going to be doing in cities where they're, you know, using that water in water features?
Water features are expensive. And so if parks are going to do that, they've got to have the budget for it.
Okay.
You know, I don't know what kind of budget the Berner Botanic Garden had, but it was a big construction project. Wonderful idea and would certainly attract people. I'll tell you one thing. I was just in England and I saw some fantastic play areas for kids where they had very shallow circulating water where the kids could play in the water. And if provided the water's clean and filtered, that could be a good option.
Great. Always lots of options. Well, we're talking about water features and other garden topics today with Liza Lightfoot of Avant Gardening and Landscaping. Our on-air producer today is Jane Rotunda, and Dave Potras is our technical director. Thank you for being with us on the Ideas Network. This is Garden Talk on the Larry Mueller Show. I'm Jill Nadeau. We're talking about water features and sustainable gardens. So, Liza, you had mentioned earlier about maintenance and that it can be difficult. What are some of the things you do have to do to maintain a pond?
Well, if you really want to do a good job of cleaning the pond in the spring, the big thing is draining it. So you need a trash pump to pump out the water. You need to take the fish out.
That's
and
a good idea.
Put the fish into like some kind of water receptacle. You have to power wash down all the rocks, get all the algae, the leaves out, and so on. And then once it's thoroughly cleaned, you refill it and put in biological products to get the microorganisms back. And then you have to put the fish back in and. You know, the fish need to be at the same, the water needs to be at the same temperature. Because if the water's a lot colder and you put the fish in, then it'll shock the fish. So there's things like that to think about. Cleaning out the filters, cleaning out the pump, the filter pads, you know, they're kind of like a polypropylene thick pad that gets filled with gunk.
Sure.
You have to clean those out. And then you're reconnecting the pump. Making sure that the pump is working. Sometimes your electricity does, you know, will go out, or your trip a breaker or something for some reason. But, you know, obviously you'll have a GFI plug out there. But, you know, those are all things you have to check on.
Does a pond require a pump? Do you have to have one?
Yes, okay. I really believe you do. Otherwise, you've got stagnant water that just is becomes unpleasant.
Except for mosquitoes, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, well, let's go back to the phones. Jonathan in Fall Rivers, what can we help you with?
Well, I have a question on my property. I have about 8 acres, and about 2 acres of it is quite wet. It's not a full marsh, but it tends that direction. And I've thought for a while that maybe I could drain that into a pond, but I don't really know where to get started.
I think the place to get started is with your local county office, because I'm sure they have regulations around wetlands and wet areas. You'd have to get a permit from them or from the DNR or somebody. So that's where I would start and find out what you're actually legally allowed to do.
And Jonathan, there is a Wisconsin Wetlands Association too, and I'm sure they have lots of information on their website, or you could give them a call too. So yeah, because you're dealing with a lot of different things. Now, if he was given permission to do something like that, how sustainable is that? I mean, you never know how much water you're going to have in your marsh, do you?
Right. So you're thinking about draining the water in your marsh into a pond. You know, I've heard of people putting in what is considered a duck scrape, which is kind of a low-lying pond that sometimes might dry out in a really dry period, but will attract wildlife. You know, maybe something like that would work. You know, it's a big project, it sounds like, and maybe something you might need an engineer as well to figure it out.
Okay, thank you, Jonathan. We have Margaret in Kaukauna. Hi, Margaret.
Hi. I have this section in my yard. I live on the Niagara Escarpment, but I'm downhill, and I get ledge water in a part of my yard that is perpetually wet.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not, if I dig 4 inches, I hit water. And it's clay. And it's just one section. We have a retaining wall. It's a land between two retaining walls, basically.
Okay. What about what's there now? Have you got grass growing or
weeds?
Weeds, yeah. What about just?
I have cattails and I have wild willow. I did plant some dogwood, but the dogwood died because it drowned.
That's interesting. Yeah, because normally dogwood will grow in wetlands. That's interesting. Well, I was going to suggest that you select possibly some native plants that like a wet area, wetland area, some of the sedges and, milkweeds. The swamp milkweed is a nice plant, attracts butterflies. You know, just come up with a nice list, and I'm sure there are people that can help you put together a list of good plants, but just turn it into some kind of planting area that likes that kind of location.
Yeah, so I'm sure you've got, when you design, Liza, you take into consideration what's there already, right?
Yes, I do. In fact, in two ways. One is what's there and what are we going to save? And two is what's there and what does that tell me about the landscape? Because, you know, obviously whatever plants are growing there will tell me if it's a dry or wet area or does that answer your question?
Yeah. And just to kind of go into a little bit more detail, you're headed for trouble if you try to make a wet space with dry plants.
Oh, absolutely.
Right?
Yeah, it's a losing battle. Mm-hmm. You'll lose.
Yeah, so go with what you have.
Yeah, just work with the landscape that you have, with with the ecology, with the slopes and the low spots and the, you know, work with what you've got and right plant, right place, really.
Right. Good advice for all of that. What do we need to do to prepare a water feature for winter? We kind of talked a little bit about it. Why don't you go over that?
Yeah, certainly. Well, you know, before freeze up, before leaf drop, You can always put a net over your water feature. You can buy them online, and a net will help stop a lot of the leaves getting into the pond. Because once the leaves get into the pond, you've got that big cleaning job that you have to do in spring. You can also remove them in the fall too. Sometimes the leaves will change the pH of the pond, which is important to know. Like, we have an oak tree over our pond, so a lot of those oak leaves will change the pH, and fish like the pH to be slightly on the alkaline side. So it's important to know that, and you could always test your water and see what the pH is. But so putting a net down, and then once we get close to freeze up, it's important to put an aerator and a de-icer into the pond if you have fish there. If you don't have fish, you can let the pond freeze over. But an aerator and a de-icer will keep a hole in the ice so that oxygen gets into the water, and the fish need that oxygen. So it's really important to do that. And plus, sometimes people keep their water, their waterfalls going. So you get kind of an ice sculpture, which can look really nice.
It does. Looks beautiful.
But you do need to keep a de-icer in the pond.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what about the fish themselves? If it's not deep enough, don't they have to be brought inside?
Yes. You don't want that pond to freeze solid. So if it's a really shallow pond, you will need to bring them inside. Typically, you need a depth of a minimum of 4 feet to keep them outside. How we build ponds is that they have side shelves that gradate down to a low area. And then at the low part of the pond, we usually create some fish hiding places. And sometimes I think they live down there in the winter. And those fish hiding places are usually, we have a large 6 or 8 inch pipe underneath rocks, that so the fish can swim into those pipes and hide in those pipes. So so it's important to have that kind of depth in your pond if you're going to have them in the pond over winter.
And those hiding places are important for predators too.
Absolutely, yeah. Yeah, heron, once they find your pond, unless you have a way to drive them away, they may be back. So
they will, trust me. They will be back. We had talked a little bit earlier about runoff and creating a dry riverbed. That's basically what a rain garden is, isn't it?
Well, a dry creek bed is a little different than a rain garden. A rain garden actually captures water and will purposefully drive it down into the ground. So when we build a rain garden, we'll dig down almost 4 feet and put in a layer of gravel and then a thick layer of engineered soil that's very permeable. And then we'll plant the plants into that. So, yeah, there are lots of ways you can capture water to percolate down. There's a product called an aqua block as well we use that is really good for that. Mm-hmm. And so dry creek bed really just directs the water flow to stop scouring in the soil and so on.
And then if you don't want the water to run off like into streets and things.
Right.
The rain garden makes sense for that.
Yeah, okay. It captures water. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people these days, in fact, I just designed one this week, a rain garden for someone who's got a sump pump. So they're really good for sump pumps and downspouts and all of that to capture that water.
Okay. And we do have another phone call, Eugene in Viola. Hi, Eugene.
Good morning. One of the nicest ponds I think I've ever seen is from going following 131 going toward Ontario on the right-hand side. There's a guy that's got a pond probably about 20 feet wide and about 30 feet long. He's got it rubber lined, and it's about 9 feet deep. And he feeds it with an artesian well. He's got an overflow on it.
Beautiful.
He keeps catfish in it year-round.
That sounds wonderful. Yeah, lucky that he has that well.
This part of the country, you have a lot of springs, and they build a small dam on that spring, and they'd run a hydraulic water ram off it to use it to pump water to the house or the barn.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Great. Well, thank you, Gene. Thanks for sharing that with us. That's another thought, too. If people do have artesian wells, that's another way to feed. But you do have to have another place for the water to go afterwards.
Right. Yeah. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You can't just circulate it.
We've had listeners can do maybe one or two things to make their gardens more environmentally friendly. What would you recommend?
Well, I would start with native plants.
Okay.
I love working with native plants. And there are lots of native plant derivatives, you know, that have been hybridized that are beautiful and showy and they work well in our environment and there's just less maintenance.
And a lot of times I think people think native plants, I'm not going to get any color from them. But that's not necessarily true.
It is not true at all. Mm-hmm. I had the pleasure of designing a large native garden for some clients on the west side, who in a neighborhood where you don't want it to look weedy.
Sure.
You want it to look really nice.
Mm-hmm.
So what I did was I did mass drifts of one type of plant next to another type of plant. And I can't tell you how beautiful that garden is. It's gorgeous today and as gorgeous as it was when we put it in. And there's constant color. If you design it so you've got something happening spring, summer, fall, and going into winter with the seed heads and dry grasses, you've got a really wonderful garden to look at.
Sure. What are some of your favorite go-to plants?
Well, I love... It's a tall plant, but I absolutely love it. It's called Vernonia. And it's a very tall native plant with purple flowers, and the monarch butterflies love it. That's one of my favorite natives.
Okay.
Well, of course, and there's so many.
There are a lot.
Love them all. The goldenrods, the cone flowers, the GM, the prairie smoke in spring, you know, pulsatilla, anemone pulsatilla, the native anemones are beautiful. Mm-hmm. You just can't stop.
Well, we do have a call here. We've got Chris, and she is in Oxford. Hi, Chris. What's your question?
Hi there. I was wondering, you had mentioned earlier that you had a antifreeze that you could put in a fish pond that has fish. What would that be?
I'm not sure that I said that exactly, but I will say this. You want to put in a de-icer. A de-icer is a heating element that actually heats the pond. It's not a liquid product or anything. No, I definitely would never use an antifreeze.
Yeah. I know a lot of people call antifreeze de-icer. So I understand exactly where you're coming from that, Chris, but do not do that. That would be bad and expensive, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that gets confusing after a while. So when you go out to a client, I think a lot of us who are gardeners don't necessarily have a big plan.
Right.
We're just like, oh, I love this flower. Let's just plant it here.
Yeah.
So when you go out to a garden, how do you start? How do you get the land, yard owner, the homeowner to understand that it's the big plan. It's not just one plant.
Yeah. Well, that's really an interesting question. It's funny. I have a lot of those questions with my own family. I've who love plants and want everything in the garden, but it just doesn't work, you know. I think the main thing I try to impress upon clients is firstly, how much are they willing to spend in terms of time and money on their gardens? So that really determines a lot of the choices of plants. Then, of course, you look at the garden and you look at the ecosystem and the whole microclimate. And we do a complete site analysis to decide what's going to work where. I always try to encourage customers to think about those kinds of things before they run out and buy their favorite plant. Because you can spend thousands of dollars on the wrong plants.
Oh, yes. I'm sure there's people out there who have done that.
Including myself.
Yes, I have too. So KM in Cross Plains sent in a photo of their pond, and they built a 300-gallon pond above ground with a waterfall, and they have about 15 to 20 goldfish. It uses a filter that has a 13-watt UV light and keeps water crystal clear. Every pond needs a fish tower, which I have never seen.
I've never seen that either.
They send this picture of. It's a 2-gallon jar. And in the wintertime, they have a pond inside the house, which is the fish's winter spa.
Ah, lucky fish.
So this fish tower is basically a 2-gallon jar upside down.
Ah.
Above the water, and the fish are in it.
Wow, that's really interesting. Nice for kids to see.
Yeah.
The fish. You can really see them nicely.
Yeah, you certainly can. It's nice because sometimes you can't see those fish because all those hidey holes.
Right.
They like to find them. Yeah.
And the minute they see you coming, unless you've got fish food in your hand, they're off.
Well, see, I never fed our fish. They had to scavenger on their own, and they were just fine. So
Yeah. Our fish, we've learned to attract them to the edge with the fish food.
Mm-hmm.
They're a bit like animal, you know, cats and dogs.
Oh, sure. Yeah, domesticized, right?
Nice pets.
Yeah. So let's talk about some of the other things that you design. Patios, for instance.
Yep.
And water features and patios go really well
really
together.
Really nicely together. Yep. To have a small water feature next to your patio or, you know, there's so many design ideas you can do. Decks are lovely, especially if the deck goes over the pond a little bit. You're right on the edge of the pond. There's a lot you can do with patios and ponds.
What are some of your favorite materials to use on a patio?
Well, again, I love natural stone. I like natural materials. I like clay pavers. I'm not a big fan of the concrete. I just don't think it lasts very well. Natural stone, there's various different kinds from New York bluestone to Colorado red sandstone, the flagstones that we use, limestone, white limestone or Chilton stone, beautiful stone products that are really lovely. And you can get the cut pavers. If you don't like that irregular look so much with the spaces in between, you can get cut stone but it's not inexpensive because you do have to lay each individual stone. It's not like laying a plane of base and then just laying down all the stones at the same level. They're all different thicknesses, so you have to adjust each stone to fit nicely.
When it comes to maintenance of the natural stone, what do you need to do?
Well, it used to be a situation where weeds would get in the cracks and it was a lot of problems that way. But nowadays, there are products that jointing sands that you can sweep in between the cracks that prevent the weeds from coming up. They harden when you once you sweep the sand in between the cracks and put a light water spray over the top, they harden and sort of fuse the patio together nicely and really help prevent weeds from coming through. You will get the odd weed or two, but they really have changed how well those patios are, how easy they are to maintain.
And as far as like a deck you're talking about, What do you like to use? Because there's so many products on the market now.
There are a lot of nice products. Cedar is always good because it's somewhat water resistant and insect resistant. Not entirely, but... and then some of the recycled plastic products, if used artistically, can work very well. There are other exotic woods that are very tough. To be honest with you, we haven't put in a deck for a while, and I'm a little bit out of sorts in terms of knowing what the new woods are that people are using.
Mm-hmm.
But we've always used cedar and treated pine, of course.
Oh, sure. What about retaining walls? You know, that comes right along with a lot of this kind of stuff. What do you like to? When do you need a retaining wall first?
Well, if you have a steep slope that's difficult to mow, for example, and is maybe hazardous to mow, considering a retaining wall is a good idea so you can create level planes. If you've got a situation where, say, for example, the soil is too high on the side of the house and you need to pitch away, you may need to put a little retaining wall further away from the house to keep the soil away from the house. There are lots of situations. Garden walls are really lovely as a feature, maybe not essential, but can be a nice design feature. But really, retaining walls are there for retaining soil. Mm-hmm. So that's usually how we use them.
And you put in a number of those?
Yeah. We've been putting in retaining walls for years. I love natural stone again. There are lots of precast concrete products that are very good and functional. And in certain situations, they may be the best option because once you get the base layer in, the rest of the stones go in very easily, whereas natural stone, you really need more of a stone mason type of person, someone who, even though they're dry stone, it's dry stacked. It takes a skill to put it together, a really well constructed dry stacked retaining wall.
Definitely, that's an art.
It is an art.
And we've got Barry in Cross Plains who has a question for you. Hi, Barry.
Deicer.
Hello.
Go ahead, Barry.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I've had a pond for about 10 years, and over the winter, I've used deicers, but I found that aerators seem to be better. So you don't get as much algae buildup over the winter. And you can, I'll take my comment offline.
Oh, thank you, Barry.
Yeah, we use both. And that is what I think is recommended, is a deicer and the aerator.
What are the difference between the deicer and the aerator?
Well, the deicer will stop the pond from freezing over completely, especially in a really cold period.
Mm-hmm.
The aerator will keep the pond open. Mm-hmm. But if you get a really hard freeze, it can close it.
Okay. So the aerator basically bubbles, right?
Yep.
Okay.
And it puts oxygen into the water, which the fish need.
Very important. Very important. And we're talking about fish, but what about like frogs and other little creatures that come to your pond?
Yeah, absolutely. We have a lot of frogs and some people are not that excited about frogs. I love frogs.
I love frogs, too.
And I love the sound they make.
Oh, yes. In the spring, oh, my goodness.
Yep. Yeah. And, you walk up to the pond and plop, you hear a plop, and that's some big toad or pond. A frog has jumped in. It's always fun.
It's always fun to have that. Let's go to Patty. She's over in Holland, Michigan. Hi, Patty. Patty, you there?
Hello?
Yes. What can we help you with?
So our sump pump drains into the backyard, and we are close, Lake Michigan, close enough where our water level is really high. So the water is not draining into the soil, and we've got essentially a pond in the backyard. Mm. And we need to figure out a way to drain that water and we don't have a community drain into the city sewage. Mm. So I just need recommendations on the best way to go about dispersing that water.
That is a very difficult question. I worked with a client this spring who had a very similar situation. And truthfully, it's not something I can advise you over the airwaves right now without seeing it and really analyzing what the problems are. But it sounds to me like the water table's really high and you don't have a lot of options to drain it away. I would find a local expert who can help you solve that problem if it is solvable.
Well, good luck, Patty. That's, it does sound like a complicated thing. So, Liza Lightfoot is our guest on Garden Talk today. I'm Jill Nadeau. Glad to have you with us today on the Ideas Network. You are listening to Garden Talk. I'm Jill Nadeau, filling in for Larry Mueller today. And right now, we are taking gardening questions, water feature questions, and we have Jim, who's in La Crosse, and he has a question for us. Go ahead, Jim.
Hi. I have about a 75-year-old pond that's got quite an infestation of duckweed, and it's about average is 4.5 feet deep. The pond's about a half acre. And I'm wondering if there's any way to treat it. I've got fish in it, so I really don't want to treat it chemically. And I'm wondering if there's any other way to treat it.
You know, I'll be honest with you, Jim. That's a little bit out of my league. I can tell you more about backyard ponds, but that's a sizable pond, and duckweed's not something I've ever had to deal with.
And that's pretty natural, the duckweed comes. But, you know, Jim, you might want to talk to your UW Extension person in La Crosse, in your county. They probably have lots of information for you. Or, you know, if anybody listening has had this problem, give us a call. We always look for advice. Our listeners are really smart. So that would be great. So thanks, Jim, for that question. Let's go back to the phones here. Ed in Northern Illinois. What question do you have for us?
Hi. I have a question about placing rocks over the liner along the edge of a disappearing stream so that it looks natural. I've been building one that's about 25 feet long with a 24-inch drop over a few ledges, and everything's fine. I used online calculator to figure out flow rates, and I have a biofilter, but the artistic part of making it look nice at this point.
That is such a hard question. I understand that completely. It really takes a good eye when working with rocks. Here's a couple of little tips that I would give to you. Firstly, study natural streams. And if you are a person who goes out into the woods and looks at nature, you'll probably have seen some beautiful streams in the past. You can copy in your mind some of those ideas. But here are some other tips that I can give you. Use a variety of sizes of rocks, from as big as you can possibly put in to smaller pebbles, really tiny pebbles even. Not real tiny, not pea gravel size, but, you know, maybe half inch, three quarter inch size gravels. And you know, you can cover the whole liner, including where the water flows. Maybe put like a 1-inch pebble in the base of the stream bed and do some rock groupings along the sides. You know, in our industry, we work with odd numbers, threes, sevens, fives. You know, you can put groupings of rocks of similar size together, and sometimes a vertical rock will give some interest to the edge. But definitely work with a variety of stone sizes.
Did that answer your question, Ed?
It does. I feel better already. I'm going to go at it this weekend, and I have loads of granite and rocks from up north that are beautiful. So I have lots of rock to work with.
Great.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Excellent.
And I've done that, Ed, and I've found that, you know what, you put it in there and you just keep moving it around till it looks good. You know,
right.
You'll know when you got it. So good luck with that. Let's go now to Marilyn, and Marilyn is in Ellison Bay. Hi, Marilyn.
Good morning. I have a small water garden in my backyard, and it's probably 14 or 15 years old. And typically, I have someone come in the spring to clean it out, basically. I didn't sign up for buying the suction equipment and all that. But what I found this year, the fellow was not able to make it. And what I have found is I have just numerous tadpoles in there this spring and summer. And I've noticed more dragonflies. And I just think that perhaps by taking everything out of the pond in the early spring, maybe you're losing some of this, some of the critters that are, you know, getting born and going to soon be on the landscape.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's an interesting observation of yours. I've not seen that, but it sounds like something worth checking out. That you can get by without pulling all the water out of the pond, but you need to fish out all the leaves and maybe get in there and you know, use a good net and get all the leaves out. We have We have not always taken the water out every spring, and the pond will be fine. It mightn't be a bad idea to test the pH in the pond if you've got fish, just to make sure that it's not too acidic. I think, you know, you could play with it and see how it is next year, as long as you get all the debris out and the sludge as much as you can.
Is you're having to worry about the filter?
Yes.
Because of that.
Yes, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the pump. You've got to make sure all the debris is removed from the pump and the filter. Mm-hmm. And there are vacuum systems that you can clean the pond with the water in it. You can find them online at some of the water pond suppliers.
And does the size of the pond make a big difference too?
Yeah, I would say so. I mean, a really large pond is not something you're going to drain every year and clean.
Right. So yeah. I know we didn't with ours. So
yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thanks, Marilyn. Let's go to Tim now. He's in Madison. Hi, Tim.
Yes, hello. Liza, this is your Irish friend, Tim, here. I'm a deck builder in Madison.
Oh, Tim, hi. How are you?
Good. Yeah, I wanted to call in since John mentioned deck materials. And if you want to stay with the natural woods, especially your own water features for the spatter and that, a good product is Ipe. It's a mahogany. And it has... You'll see that in boardwalks or by the oceans, and that it has an outdoor lifespan of about 50 to 70 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Fabulous.
Wow.
If you don't stain it, finish it, right, it'll turn to a silvery gray. But if you do stain it and you want to maintain it every couple of years, it has a beautiful dark mahogany gray into it, which is just absolutely gorgeous.
And what was the name of that again, Tim?
Ipe, it's spelled IPE.
Oh.
It sounds more like Ipe. but yeah, it is a little expensive. So the second name might be more appropriate, but it is.
It's expensive.
It runs about the same price as the composites.
Mm.
And, it's a very hard wood, very, very dense, so you need to drill it before you screw it down. Every screw needs to be drilled beforehand.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And also, if you're going with cedar, Liza had mentioned cedar, it's a good idea to put a sealer on the bottom of the boards before you install it, because that's where it soaks in all the moisture from underneath. And that'll practically double the life of your cedar deck if mm-hmm. you do that. Mm-hmm.
Well, great. Great information.
Yeah. Yeah, thanks for calling in, Tim. That's really wonderful. Mm-hmm. I was searching in my mind for Ipe, and I couldn't think of the name of the word. So I'm so glad you called in.
And I think we're going to have a rush on Ipe because people are like, oh, I want to look into that. Well, thank you so much, Tim. What do you think about composite wood for decking?
There's a lot of very good composites out there. If the deck is low to the ground, I would recommend something that doesn't have any wood fibers in it. I would stay away from the wood fibers because the wood fiber has a tendency to absorb the moisture, and if it doesn't have good ventilation, it will hold it.
Mm.
So something with a PVC or PVC, a product I use, which we've been quite successful with, it is a product called AZEK, A-Z-E-K. And they have a collection of decking boards now. It's the vintage collection, which looks almost like a natural wood. It's good. They've done a really good job on that.
Okay.
And so to the untrained eye, they might think it's a natural wood, but to the professionals, they will know it is a composite.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Thank you for so much information, because we've had a number of people who've called over the years asking those specific questions. So thank you very much. Okay, let's go to David, and he is in Hollandtown. Hi, David.
Hello.
What's your question?
Yes, I have a 3,500-gallon pond. Been in about 15 years or more with 6 koi in it. 3 of them are about 12 to 14 inches long. The other 3 are, I would say 20 to 24 inches long, 5, 7, 10-pound range. They're getting a little bit... The 3 of them are getting a little bit too big for our pond, and I'd be interested in finding a resource, at least locally in Wisconsin, who would be willing to buy these fish. One is a female, and it's spawned at least three times, and the other two, I believe, are males.
Okay. So you're looking for some place where you could sell them, David?
Well, somebody would be interested in buying them.
Okay.
Or taking them off my hands. They're getting a little bit too big for the pond right now.
Okay. All right. Have you tried any of the like botanical gardens that may have koi in their water features?
No, I have not. I never thought of that.
Yeah, I bet you they would take them.
Mm-hmm.
That would be my thought. So, but have you heard of anything?
Not specifically, but that would have been my suggestion too.
Okay.
I think it's a good one.
Okay, excellent. Well, thank you, David. Now, I've always thought, and I could be wrong, that fish will just grow to the size of the pond and stop. That's not the case, apparently?
Well, they have stayed a certain size in my pond.
Okay.
So I'm not sure about the answer to that. I do know that the fish at Ulbrich are huge, and their pond is not that big.
No, it isn't. And I wonder if they take theirs out in the wintertime.
Well, it's in the conservatory.
Oh, that one. Okay, because they have some outside ones,
too.
Yeah,
the outside ones, So I'm not sure about that.
Well, next time we have someone from Ulbrich here, we'll have to ask him those questions.
Yep.
So, yeah, and again, you know, if someone is interested in putting in a water feature, that's a great place to go is botanical gardens. And we've got some beautiful ones down here, and I know there's some nice ones up north, like Green Bay and places like that. Do you have a favorite one in the area?
Well, I love Ulbrich.
Sure.
It's 10 minutes from my house.
Oh,
I visit it regularly.
That's so lucky. Our guest today on Garden Talk has been Liza Lightfoot of Avant Gardening and Landscaping in Madison. You can find out more about her business by going to Avant Gardening. That's AVANTGardening.com. Stay with us. There's lots more to come. We are talking about water features and sustainable, low-maintenance gardens on Garden Talk today. I'm Jill Nadeau in for Larry Mueller. Thanks for joining us on the Ideas Network. Liza Lightfoot is back with us. She is president of Avant Gardening and Landscaping in Madison. Her company focuses on sustainable landscapes with site-appropriate plants. And we do have an email, Liza, from Jan. She's interested in placing a water fountain in her garden. However, there's no electrical outlets nearby, something I think a lot of people have a problem with. So she's wondering, what about solar water fountains? Have you used those?
Well, I've had a little bit of experience with solar water fountains, and I would say that it's been kind of spotty.
Mm.
You know, they work well when the sun is out and it's, you know, you've got full sun. But if you've got a heavily overcast day, they'll kind of peter out. I'm not sure whether a battery backup wouldn't help. And I think if the size of the panel is large enough to generate enough energy, maybe that would help. I've just seen them with fairly small panels.
Mm-hmm.
So
do some research, Jan.
Yeah.
see what people think about that. So let's talk a little bit about low maintenance. I mean, we like to go out in our gardens, but not constantly. So what are some of the things that you do to make gardens and lawns low maintenance?
Well, okay, starting with lawns, we really take a more organic approach. I like diversity in my lawn. I have clover in my lawn. I have a little bit of creeping Charlie, and I've come to accept that. You know, but if you want that picture perfect lawn, then that is going to be fairly high maintenance. There's a lot of inputs. As far as the landscaping and beds and plantings are concerned, shrubs are very low maintenance. Once they fill in, you know, there's not much you have to do. You can mow around them. They don't even necessarily have to be in a bed. So shrubs shrubs are low maintenance. Grasses, ornamental grasses are very low maintenance. Not much grows in to a grass once it's taken hold. As far as perennial gardens are concerned, many people are afraid of perennial gardens because they think that they're high maintenance, and they can be. But I do believe in the concept of, again, large drifts of plants next to other drifts of plants, so that when the plants grow in full, they really take they take the space of all the open soil, and then weeds don't come in. It takes a few years to establish them to that point, but a fully planted garden bed with perennials can be fairly low maintenance.
What about when they get to a certain point and they have to be divided?
Yeah, plants do need to be divided. Some not so much, others more so. Like, for example, Siberian iris, you know, will form a ring and it starts to peter out if you don't divide it. Other plants are more, you know, self-sustaining. Mm-hmm. I mean, of course, there's the hostas, which are very self-sustaining. They do need to be divided if they grow too large. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you can also let them grow to their full size and just let them be, you mm-hmm. know. So they're very low maintenance.
So taking native plants who don't get divided in the wild, obviously that's a good choice too.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. But be cautious too, because some natives can be quite aggressive mm-hmm. and they can drop their seeds and start popping up all over the place. So I'm always very careful about in a more urban or residential garden, I'm always a bit more careful about which natives I use, because some of them can really escape and get quite pesty.
Yes, and we don't like those volunteers usually.
Yeah.
Well, we did get an email from Dave in Spooner, and he's asking about drain channels. He's looking for a material that will allow water to percolate but discourage plant growth. He's currently using gravel, but over the years, leaves and ants have created soil, which encourages the growth of the weeds, the grasses, the trees, etc. I'm sure you've seen that before, Liza.
Yeah, gravel is always a challenge. You know, a gravel garden is not low maintenance unless you are willing to blow out all the debris diligently every year. I do love my blower for that reason. Mm-hmm. It's a great tool. As far as fabrics. I'm not a big fan of fabrics with plants. You know, they do kind of kill the microorganisms underneath the fabric, but it will percolate. So you can use fabrics with bark mulch or wood chips. That can work.
Now, in this case, and I'm not sure exactly what he's meaning by drain channels, but could this be a case where you do plant it with natives and then the weeds can't come because it's all filled in with that?
Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, definitely. If you're trying to get water to percolate down, natives are a good solution because many of them have very deep root structures. So the water will sort of literally drain down alongside their roots into the soil. Mm-hmm. And so I would say that would be a very good choice. And selecting a plant that, like I say, doesn't, isn't overly aggressive, doesn't seed too much and cause problems is a good solution.
Because mm-hmm. I know I've had really bad luck with landscape fabrics over the years and a lot of, and they always, you know, rip or whatever. So it's a problem.
Yeah. Yeah. No, landscape fabrics, they have their place, but not every place.
Not every place. There you go. That's the key. When we're talking about low maintenance lawns, what are some of the things that you do to keep them up? You do maintenance in your company. So
right.
What are some of the things you use?
Well, some techniques we use that I think work very well without using chemicals is aerating and overseeding. You can really thicken up your grass that way. We use compost tea. We do compost applications, top dressing of compost. There's a lot of microorganisms in the compost and the compost tea, and that really helps to invigorate the lawns. We've got some wonderful examples around town of lawns that have really come in nicely using those methods.
And how do you make compost tea?
We actually buy it.
Oh, you do? So
we
can buy that.
We buy it in large 50-gallon containers. Mm-hmm. Purple Cow Organics sells it to us, and their compost product as well. Wonderful products. Mm-hmm. We really love them.
And when you aerate, what do you use?
We use a mechanical aerator.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Why is that important, the aerating?
Again, it's putting oxygen into the soil. Everything needs oxygen. Mm-hmm. So grass roots need the oxygen as well.
Mm-hmm. And what about pests? I mean, you know, the voles and moles and things. Do you have an organic way of taking care of that?
Well, mainly trapping.
Trapping. Okay.
Trapping. Mm-hmm. And, you know, the cinch bugs and Japanese beetle larvae and stuff. Sometimes we have to use a chemical for mm-hmm. that.
So as much as you do try to be organic, or sometimes you just can't.
Right. Well, there are organic products, mm-hmm. Milky Spores, mm-hmm. You know, and we will use those whenever we can. Uh-huh. Those are really our first choice. The chemicals, the synthetic chemicals are the things we use as a second choice, you know, if there's nothing else we can do.
Okay. Okay. And where do you find out about all the new things in the organic world?
Well, we get a catalog called Arbico. That has wonderful products.
Okay.
There's also a store on Stoughton Road called Paradigm Gardens. Mm-hmm. They have a great selection of organic products. I love that shop.
Okay.
So, yeah, there are places you can buy. And online, you know, you can buy a lot of things online.
Mm-hmm. But try to go local.
Try
to go local. So we were talking earlier, you just got back from the UK.
Yep.
And you were visiting gardens.
I was. I spent some wonderful days in gardens around the UK. One of my favorite is Hidcote,
okay.
which was a piece of property that was purchased by an American back around the turn of the century. And he developed this beautiful garden with the help of his mother that has a water feature. It has lovely garden rooms, you know, really emphasizes the garden rooms, these long alleyways of trees, beautiful vistas. And they've got this one design idea that was actually developed by Capability Brown, who was landscape
yes.
architect mm-hmm. in England, called a ha-ha. And a ha-ha is it's basically a trench to stop the sheep from coming into the garden
sure,
area.
Sure.
But when you look across the vista, you don't see it. So it's not a fence doesn't obscure the view. And they've got a lovely example of a ha-ha there.
Oh, that's great. What are some of your other favorite ones?
Well, I love Sissinghurst. Sissinghurst is a beautiful garden. Mm-hmm. Virginia Woolf was there, and they've got a white garden that is spectacular. Beautifully pruned and shaped plants, just stunningly maintained.
What is it about an English garden that's different than what we're used to in the States?
Well, if you look at the old examples of English gardens, the long perennial border is a very typical English style that you see in gardens. Modern gardens are a little different. The meadow is really popular now
is
in
it?
England. Hmm. Yeah, but the formal gardens, you know, where you have the term parterre garden is something that you see a lot in England, where they're little borders of boxwood with interesting plants on the inside. Mm-hmm. That's very typically
kind of like an
English.
herb garden,
yeah,
similar?
but
not garden,
yes, not gardens,
okay.
yes,
mm-hmm.
But used with perennials, and then of course topiary.
Oh yes, topiary. Now that's an art right there.
Yep.
We do have Charlie on the line. He's in Richfield. Hi, Charlie. What can we help you with?
I have a bed of I call them ditch lilies that I want to get rid of and replace it with some hydrangea plants and corbels and whatnot. So do I have to dig those ditch lilies out, or can I just like put something over them to kill the roots? I've cut them down already.
You can certainly smother them. I recommend putting black plastic, rubber roofing, any kind of dark product like a thick, heavy weed barrier, and staple it down well so no light gets in the sides, and just leave it there for good at least 2 months. You want it down for at least 2 months, and then I think with those lilies, I would leave it for longer. I'd do it now and not expect to do anything till spring. And you can sometimes kill them that way.
Sometimes.
Yeah.
That's the key, Charlie.
Yeah.
Now, what kind of light do you have here, Charlie?
We have a woodland garden.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah. The ditch lilies bloom, but they don't bloom that long.
Yeah.
They get enough sun to bloom, but...
Well, I think hydrangeas and hostas are a good solution. Choose the soft tissue hydrangeas, not the woody ones, because the woody ones really need sun.
Okay, yes.
Okay, good luck, Charlie. Let us know how that works, by the way, if that works for you, because we do get a lot of calls, too, about people asking about how to get rid of those tiger lilies, ditch lilies, whatever you want to call them. So,
yep. No, yeah. They're a tough one.
Mm-hmm, they are. But they're pretty,
they
especially
are.
Along the roads. I think that looks really, really nice.
They have a place
mm-hmm,
as well.
Exactly. And as far as hydrangeas go, talk a little bit about hydrangeas, because there are different kinds. What works well in Wisconsin?
Well, there are lots and lots of kinds of hydrangeas. I like, I really love the Annabelle hydrangea.
Mm-hmm.
It's a heavy bloomer, and so sometimes it will flop, and also they do grow quite big and thick, so make sure you've got a lot of space for them.
Mm-hmm.
They start out small and look perfect when they first go in, but 10 years from now, they can get really thick. So give them lots of room to grow. I love the woody hydrangeas. One of my favorites is Quickfire or Little Quickfire, because it has the pinkest flowers.
Oh.
And the Little Quickfire stays small, so it's nice for foundation plantings and so on. Then, of course, there's the Endless Summer types. And some people have had problems with them reblooming. I was on a forum recently where some people have had success with certain techniques to get them to rebloom. So I think there is hope for them. But there's many, many different types of hydrangeas.
And each one requires different care, right?
Yes. The soft tissue hydrangeas bloom on same season wood. The woody hydrangeas, well, they also bloom on, you can cut them back.
Mm-hmm.
I always cut them back 3 nodes from the tip, and then they bloom beautifully for me.
Oh, so you don't cut them all the way down to the ground?
No,
oh.
You do not. But
okay.
The soft tissue ones you can.
You do, okay.
Yeah.
And a lot of times with some of our winters here, they're dead on top anyway, but they come back.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Yeah, they
okay.
do.
What are some of your other, like we had mentioned about go-to perennials, what are some of your other favorites that you like to use?
Well, I love the Penstemons. I think they're beautiful. They're native.
Mm-hmm.
I love Baptisia. Baptisia australis is a lovely plant, and the white native Baptisia that has a very umbrella-like shape is
mm-hmm.
wonderful.
Mm-hmm.
I love the Silphiums, you know, which are, they have yellow flowers and they turn their heads towards the sun.
Oh.
Some of them have beautiful leaves, and we have a great big curly dock, which is a Silphium out at Avant that I love every year. I love the wild senna, but it can pop up all over the place. It's
mm-hmm.
a beautiful yellow
mm-hmm.
plant at
mm-hmm.
this time of year. Veronicastrum or culver's root is a lovely plant.
Mm-hmm.
Funnily enough, I saw it used a lot in England in ornamental
really?
Gardens.
Oh, interesting. And it's native to this area.
It is.
Yeah.
It's a native U.S.
Now,
plant.
I would assume as a landscaper that you buy your plants potted in, not seeds. You don't do seeds.
We do a little bit of growing from seed. We grow a lot of them from rootstock.
Okay.
And cuttings.
Mm-hmm.
Our nursery personnel are really great at experimenting with different ways. They've been growing a lot of succulents from leaf cuttings lately.
Ah, succulents are very popular right now,
aren't they? They sure are, mm-hmm. Yeah. They are.
So in the last few minutes that we have before we wrap things up, Liza, what are some real basics that people need to think about before they put in a water feature?
The basics are, obviously, do you have the space? Are you prepared to do the maintenance? Because there is maintenance. Do you want fish? Do you want a full-fledged pond, or would you be happy with just a circulating water feature, a pondous water feature?
And we didn't really talk about the waterfalls.
Yes.
That's a whole nother kettle of fish.
Yeah.
What's the basics on that?
Well, it's very difficult to make waterfalls look natural, but it will make or break the pond,
yes,
in my
mm-hmm.
opinion. Mm-hmm. So having someone or using nature as your inspiration is a really very good way of getting ideas for how to put together the rocks. You know, obviously you have the liner to hide, but that's really something to consider.
Mm-hmm. And about the plumbing, I mean, you have to get your water up there.
Yeah, you do. You certainly do. And, you know, do you have the topography to do a waterfall, or do you have to create a mound to
mm-hmm.
do that?
Mm-hmm.
So there's lots to think about. And sizing the pond correctly, the pump has to be the right size for the number of gallons in the pond. You know, if you have a really tall waterfall, you're going to need a more powerful pump. There's lots of things to consider.
And there are some online tools. I know one of our listeners had mentioned about, you know, doing the elevations and things. So there are tools online that you can use, right?
Yes, there are.
Okay. And then as far as the plants that go around the pond, not necessarily in the pond, mm-hmm. What do you need to think about there?
Well, obviously you don't want them to be too close to the liner.
Okay.
But and you want to keep your views open to the pond, and maybe you want to highlight certain views. Sometimes it's nice to see the waterfall through with, you know, composition wise with something on both sides. So maybe mm-hmm. you'll have a shrub or something that you look through to see the waterfall. But nothing too big. I wouldn't say anything too large. Maybe an accent tree behind the waterfall, like a small Japanese maple or some kind of smaller focal point tree is nice.
Are there other trees that you can recommend? I mean, I know you've got to worry about roots, right?
Yeah, I wouldn't put anything that's got really large roots.
Okay, okay. And for the plants that are inside the pond, how do you prepare those areas?
Well, typically the plants that are inside the pond are going to be in some kind of pot, porous pot or basket, and they sit on the shelves that you create. The pond typically has a number of shelves to go down to the lowest point in the pond, and
uh-huh.
you sit those plants on those shelves.
Okay. Well, thank you so much, Liza. You've given us so much information. Our guest today on Garden Talk has been Liza Lightfoot of Avant Gardening and Landscaping in Madison. You can find more about her business at avantgardening.com. I'm Jill Nadeau. Thanks for listening to the Ideas Network. Enjoy your weekend.